Blog Talk Radio.
Listen. Think. Learn. Grow. Listen. Think. Learn. Grow. Live.
This is Empower the Spirit with Dr. Douglas Kelly.
And hello and good evening to everyone. Today is Sunday, October 23rd, 2011. My name is Doug Kelly. So glad you could join us tonight. We are going to talk about ghosts tonight, how to deal with ghosts and other things about ghosts. So I guess that's apropos in view of Halloween coming up here in a couple weeks. Empower the Spirit is a weekly broadcast of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science as part of our regular church services. Our mission is to empower the human spirit, so we're glad you're here for that. Again, my topic's going to be on how to deal with ghosts, and then we're going to listening to Living Free with Reverend Camille Edwards here at the bottom of the hour or thereabouts. And then Dr. Vicki Hunter will be, of course, joining me for the whole program. Vicki, welcome to the program, too.
Good evening, everybody. You know, when you say empower the human spirit, it was kind of a double there, a double humor.
Oh, yeah?
We're empowering spirits. We're empowering people in their spirits. That's on tonight's show.
That's right. Empower everybody. Just bring your dog. We'll empower your dog, too. Okay, there's your humor. All right. So, we're going to be talking about that tonight. If you've got some input and you're listening to this live program, we'd love to hear it. You can ask questions in the chat room, of course, as always, or you can call in if you'd like. The number is 714-459-3973. It's on your screen there. Of course, Reverend John Hightower will be screening your calls. So, if you'd like to get in on the discussion, you're more than welcome to do that. We also welcome those who are listening to the archive, too. So, let's talk about ghosts. One of the things that comes up an awful lot in the field is how do you deal with ghosts? A lot of folks have some interest in ghosts, you know what I mean? And some people think they're being haunted or that their house is haunted, or things can start happening and they wonder, maybe they, you know, lose a loved one in death, and so they wonder if things, these noises they begin to hear are ghosts or whatnot. And so that's what I want to go over. There's a lot of, frankly, superstitions out there that have little basis in reality as far as I'm concerned. And so you'll get some pointers here from me. I've dealt with this for many years now, and I have some definite viewpoints on how you deal with ghosts. Let's start with perhaps the overall, the overview. Even though some of these so-called haunting events can be a bit scary for many people, there's one important thing to remember, that in my experience, a good at least 90% of all hauntings can be explained by either natural occurrences, psychology, or hoaxes. Most of them are not hoaxes. That's more of a rare thing. But most of them can be explained with natural occurrences or psychological things. And I'm not talking about mentally ill people. I'm just talking about stress and different things that might be going on in one's life. So remember that if you think your house is haunted, it's probably not. That's the first thing to keep in mind. So if you're hearing things, you know, that you can't quite explain, keep looking for the answer, because there's a lot of noises around the house that can happen that can be completely natural. It could be the house settling. It could be your ice maker in your fridge, or freezer, rather. It could be the wind. It can be a lot of things. If you have animals, it could be them doing something. There's just a lot of different things. Of course, up in the great white north, as opposed to down here in sunny Florida, you know, people have furnaces, and I know furnaces, forced air furnaces, make noises. Even the baseboard electric heat can make noises from expanding metal. I mean, it heats up and it expands. So there's a lot of noises around the house. So make sure that you keep looking to find the source of any noises that you might be hearing. Now, if in fact your case involves one of the very, very few that features compelling phenomena or genuine phenomena, don't panic. Contrary to what you may have seen on TV, ghosts and spirits cannot harm you. I'm going to say it again. They cannot harm you. Now, there's a lot of ghost hunters out in the field. I'm not one of them, by the way. We'll tell you, oh yeah, you have to be careful of demons and all these other things. Well, I'm sorry. They're incorrect. In all my experience, I have never seen one verifiable case where a ghost truly harmed another person. If they could, would we not see it a lot more than we do? In my opinion, yes. Ghosts can't harm you. But some of these investigators say, well, you know, my ponytail was pulled, or, you know, I was pushed or something like that. Again, could that happen? I suppose. You know, some people claim they get scratched. And as I've always said, my cat scratches me. So what? They cannot harm you. So don't buy into those superstitions. You know, and another thing to be aware of is a definition. A lot of people get, quote, scared, but they don't really get scared. They might get startled. There is a difference between being scared and being startled. You know, if somebody's hiding behind around the corner and they jump out and say, boo, you know, yeah, that could startle us. Are we afraid of them? Probably not. There's probably, you know, some friend or sister or brother, you know, pulling a prank or something. So you can be startled, that's true, but you may not be afraid or scared, and you don't need to be. One of the most important things you want to do with spirits, view them in the same way that you view other human beings, because that's essentially what they are. Don't worry, I'll get to the whole demon thing in a little bit. But let's just talk about typical spirits and ghosts. They're just people. And if, in fact, you have a spirit or ghost in your house, they're doing things, let's see, somebody wrote in the chat room, Kathy, heavy footsteps down a hall when no one's walking. You know, that's obviously a common one. But even still, even if it's there and you can't identify it, it's not a natural occurrence, no need to be afraid, they can't harm you, you view them as people. They're probably trying to get your attention for some reason. Now, another little tidbit that I'll share with you. I don't think I have investigated a single haunting case in which one of the people was not psychically sensitive to some degree. I don't think I ever have. I think every single case I've ever done, somebody was psychically sensitive to some degree. And in my opinion, when a person has psychic sensitivity, they're much like a beacon of light in the spirit world, and spirits can be drawn to them, like, you know, like moths to a light or something like that. And so they might be seeking assistance or trying to get your attention for something. It may be somebody you don't even know, but if they see your psychic sensitivity, that light, so to speak, they might think that you can help them. Well, it's up to you to decide whether you can help them. Most people can't. What am I going to do to help? And a lot of folks are not even aware of their psychic sensitivity, and hence they find out when they start seeing and hearing things that they can't explain. So view spirits and ghosts the same you would as any other human being. One of the analogies that I use a lot with clients is like a mall. You know, I'm told that spirits are all around us all the time. I don't see them, but I'm told that by many a psychic. And I use the analogy of going to the mall. You know, you go to the mall or to a shopping center area. There's all kinds of people everywhere, right? They're all going about their business. They're all doing their thing. You're aware that they're there, but, you know, you don't really interact much with them unless you happen to bump into a friend or a relative, right? Well, they're all there. That's fine, but they're all doing their thing. Nothing to be afraid of. As I mentioned, that when a ghost shows up, there's usually a reason. They might be trying to get your attention, to get help. Therefore, the best approach, number one, don't get afraid. Don't become afraid, because you don't have to. They can't hurt you anyway, and they usually don't want to anyway. They're like people. So acknowledge them. And to acknowledge them, you just speak out. And here's another analogy that I use a lot. Let's suppose for a moment you're in your home. One evening you're watching some TV, and some benevolent, that means not harmful, some friendly person, walks in through your front door, walks up to a table and moves something, or knocks something off, or bangs on the counter. They mean you no harm. Your life is not at risk here. What would you do? Well, a lot of people tell me, well, I'd tell them to leave. And that's right. And at last resort, you might call the police and tell them to come take them out. What's happened here is a boundary violation. If a stranger walks in off the street into your home and starts moving things around or rapping on the wall or whatever they do, that's a boundary violation. They're invading your home. It's home invasion, actually. Well, it's no different with spirits. If you haven't given them permission to enter your domain, your home, it's a boundary violation, and that's the way you need to view it. Now, just because they're generally invisible and they can come in, they don't need to necessarily use the door and all that, does not automatically give them the right to come in. So if they're in there and they're trying to get your attention, you need to speak out and say, excuse me, I don't know who you are. I don't know how to help you if that's what you're looking for, but I do know one thing. I did not invite you here, and there's nothing that I can do to help you. So I'm going to respectfully but very firmly demand that you move on and leave this home alone. I can't do anything for you. I wish you the best. Go find somebody who can and is willing to help you. That's essentially it. You have to be firm, though. You don't yell. You don't get afraid. But you do request and demand, really. Very firmly demand that they leave. That's it. Pretty much what you do. Now, some people have tried that, and they say it doesn't work. Well, okay. You know, it kind of reminds me sometimes of the bully and the victim on the schoolyard, right? The victim is there going, no, please, don't hurt me. Don't hit me. I don't want to fight. You know. And the bully is doing what? They're eating that up, and they'll keep picking on the poor kid. But if the kid, the victim, stands up and says, you know what? We're not going to fight. If you want to carry this on and you want to touch me, I'm going to respond in kind, and I'm going to level you. And they look him right in the eye. Do not touch me. Do not pester me. Do not bully me ever again. Are we clear? Well, the bully's going to think twice. And even if the bully does haul off and do something, the victim's still going to fight back, and the bully will lose interest and move on. Don't forget, spirits are like people. You have various personalities. Some of these spirits are a bit aggressive, like people are. Some of them are not. The fact of the matter is, still, they can't really do anything to you. I'm far more afraid of people any day than I am of spirits, because people can actually kill you. Spirits can't. So there's a kind of a context to put it in. Don't show any fear. Don't become emotional. Just tell them you're not in a position to help. If the activity persists, you say it again. I'm sorry, I don't know who you think you are, but you are in my home and I have not invited you. That is a boundary violation. I demand that you leave right now and never return. Are we clear? Leave now. And if you say it with conviction and confidence, that's exactly what's going to happen. I have this theory that seems to have been proven true in many cases, that when you take your power back, it literally is a cure-all for so many things, including relationships. The key to resolving any paranormal activity is for the client or the person experiencing to take their power back, to not be afraid, to take and act with confidence on on the whole situation. That is the solution. I have seen it work with abductions. I've seen it work with relationships, toxic relationships. I've seen it work many times with hauntings. And I would say to you and to any investigator out there that that is exactly what we do as paranormal researchers and investigators, is we simply help the client to take their power back. Because we can go into a client's home and we can say, okay, we want you to leave. We demand that you leave. The spirit's thinking, well, this is not your house. You don't have the right to say it. And so they stay. But if we help the client to learn, we educate them to learn that, number one, they can't hurt you, and number two, it's your home, and your boundaries have been violated, and you need to insist that they're not, then the client takes their power back, and they make the demand, and the spirit has to comply. I personally believe that is a universal law of free will. They have to comply. I've just seen it. That's what I believe, and it seems to work every time. Now, there's some question about these various, what do you even call them, things that you can use to assist you in getting rid of spirits or cleansing houses and all that. The one thing and the only thing that will cleanse any location is your deliberate intent. You taking your power back, you speaking in confidence, and I mean with confidence, I should say, you taking your home back and protecting your own boundaries. That's the only thing that will cleanse any home. Now, a lot of people will use smudge sticks, sage, sweetgrass. Some will use anointing oil, put it above the doorways. Some use these St. Christopher, I'm not even sure which saint it is, honestly. I don't do that stuff, but they put these, bury these things in the four corners of property. Others will use a cross or the Bible or holy water to bless the home, to cleanse the home, that sort of a thing. Those things are only aids. They are nothing more or less than belief management aids. They do not have any power in and of themselves. I'm sorry, I can't believe that a spirit would somehow be repelled by sage. What are they thinking? Oh, wow, that smells like crap. We're out of here. Well, if that's, I don't know, do they even smell? I mean, honestly, really? They're in a different realm. They're not even in the physical realm. They're in a different plane. How would something physical affect them? If they can walk through walls or move through things, why would that have any effect whatsoever? To me, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, if I'm a spirit and somebody wants to throw some holy water, all that is an outward manifestation of internal intent. If I say, I do not want you here anymore, and I demonstrate that by throwing around some holy water, sprinkling it, or whatever, burning some sage, whatever, it's just an outward manifestation of an inner belief or an inner decision that I've made. You know, somebody mentioned putting a cross over the door. You know, it's an outward manifestation of an inner belief. That is all it is. It's like a ring when you get married. You can get married. You don't need the rings to get married. But what is a wedding ring? It is simply an outward manifestation of a decision you've made. That's all it is. And you have this little piece of paper that says, yep, you're married. But honestly, those are just outward manifestations of a commitment two people have made. They, in and of themselves, do not have any power or anything. It's the commitment, and it's registered. And, of course, in the case of marriage, it's a legal registration. Fair enough. But when it comes to ghosts and spirits, all those things are is belief manipulators or management tools, perhaps is a better way to put it. And that's all we as paranormal investigators do is assist the client. We help them to manage their beliefs, and we help to educate them so that their beliefs are more healthy. All right, so the way that you deal with spirits and ghosts, number one, it's probably not a spirit or a ghost. Number two, if it is, nothing to be afraid of. They can't hurt you. Number three, view spirits and ghosts as you would other human beings. If they're in your place as a boundary violation, demand that they leave. Now, if things persist, keep a journal. You know, just get a piece of paper out, and if you experience something, write down the date, the time, and a brief synopsis of what's going on in the home. Something that can really exacerbate, quote-unquote, spirit activity is stress in the family? Is there stress going on? Alcoholism can manifest in that way. I mean, the stress from alcoholism or an alcoholic home can manifest in that way. Somebody who's an alcoholic and isn't drinking is going through the DTs. They can hallucinate. They can see all kinds of things. That's a proven fact. So is there stress going on? Is there a child in the home? And I'm talking about a teenager. Is it a girl? Those are very common with girls. It could be a boy. It could be an adult. It's not limited to an age group, but they could be an agent for psychokinesis or what's called RSPK, recurrent spontaneous psychokinesis. That means that things will move, but it's not from a spirit or ghost. It's from a person, an agent. That's what they call poltergeist activity, PK. So you got to look at these things. If there's stress, try to get rid of it. Every time I investigate one of these things, it usually comes back down to either nothing really is going on. If there is something going on, it is often as a result of stress, and there's usually a teenager in the home going through a tough time. Yeah, I mean, teenage years are tough anyway. I also do want to comment a bit on the whole demon thing, and if you've listened to me for any length of time, you know that I do not believe in demons. I think that demons are a religious construct from the Middle Ages, the Dark Ages. They didn't know how to explain things, so they attributed it to the devil and the demons. And it's just a religious thing. It has no basis in scientific objective research. Demons don't exist. If they did, and if they could actually possess people, oh man, we wouldn't stand a chance. There'd be possessions all over the place, demonic possessions. But what do we find when we look at the world? We don't really find any demonic possessions. Well, people claim that they are, but we don't really find that. We find that people are possessed. Yes, indeed, they are certainly possessed. But most people are possessed by someone else. Take the girlfriend or the wife who's being beaten by her boyfriend or husband and yet won't press charges. Tell me, who has possessed that woman? Well, it's the boyfriend or the husband. And that's the type of possessions that exist, and they're all over the place. Demonic possessions, I'm sorry, I haven't seen one that's real. And yes, these preachers could go and, you know, do these exorcisms, which can be violent, which can be intrusive. And honestly, it's a matter of helping somebody to get the stress out of their life, the adversity out of their life. Look, this kind of stuff manifests differently with everybody. You know, some folks get asthma from stress. Some people get neck aches. Some people get muscle pain. Some people, it just depends. This kind of stress can manifest in a lot of ways. And one of the ways stress can manifest is in PK or psychokinesis activity. Some of it can manifest as a possession, you know, that they're demonically possessed. So don't worry so much about that stuff. Dr. Vicki, any comments on any of this stuff?
Yep, I got rid of a couple of demons in my life. I've met a couple.
Yeah,
I know. I called them husbands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lost 200
pounds. Sorry, I couldn't, you know, while you were talking, I just couldn't resist that one. You know, when people have fear, dark energies can attach to fear. I put it this way. When you're eating food, the body has enzymes and proteins that attach to the food sources and they carry them through the body. And it's the same way with fear. If there's energy in the outside world and you have a fear, it can attach. If there's no fear, those dark, other, lower vibration energies have zero power.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm totally with you on that. Totally with you.
And when these priests or whoever these religious leaders do an exorcism and they're successful with it, all they have done is help the person take their power back. And they usually go about it in a long, drawn-out process, which is not necessary. So,
well, many cultures have many kinds of rituals that, you know, would be very much equal to what you're saying as far as Christianity and
mm-hmm.
priests. And it's the empowerment of all the people involved in reclaiming just a simple energy. You know, I know people would argue with all of this, Doug, but
let them.
The clear thing that we have to understand is if you are centered in yourself, no one and nothing can move your energy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always say, hey, if there's a bunch of dark stuff around, come on in for tea. And they never do. Because, you know, I am unwaverable.
You got to know who you are and why you are who you are. It's what I've talked about many, many times. And that's why I teach self-acceptance, self-responsibility, respect for free will, and self-completeness as the fundamental foundation for everything from spiritual counseling to hypnosis to paranormal investigation. It all is there. You got to know who you are, and you have to be stable, grounded, and objective. And yes, there are people who might argue with it, but doesn't matter. What I'm looking for is a logically compelling basis for understanding the way things work. And I still haven't seen any good evidence for me to change my thinking that spirits can be harmful or that demons exist. Is there such a thing as a malevolent inhuman spirit, M.I.S.? I don't know. I've never seen one. I've heard people talk about them, but I've never seen one, unfortunately. I mean, it would be very cool to go on an investigation and be in the middle of a room where stuff's being thrown around. I mean, as long as it wasn't knives. But again, I've never really seen that or heard about that, something that's verifiable. You see that stuff in Hollywood. You see it on TV, but you don't see it in real life. That's the distinction. So you have to look at these cases and take them very rationally, rational mind, objective thinking, clear thinking, and protect your boundaries, protect your rights. Don't allow anyone to encroach on your boundaries. I hope this information has been of some value to those who are listening or to the live program or the archives, and maybe that can help you too. So our discussion on ghosts, of course, will continue in a few minutes with Dr. Vicki. Want to take just a quick minute before we conclude this portion and before we get into Camille Edwards' portion, and just take a moment, quiet moment, send out some positive vibes, some positive energy to those in need. Send it out to the world. Send yourself some. Let's just put out some deliberate intent for goodwill, for peace, and for people to grow in their awareness. Think of somebody you know who could use a dose, and send it on to them. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Vicki.
Well, we're going to introduce, at this moment, Reverend Camille Edwards, who I know, of course, has something brilliant to tell us again about herbs today. But for the record, I did not put any cayenne in my Caesar salad tonight, so I'm trying to back off of the cayenne a bit. Welcome, Camille. Good to hear you.
Thank you, Vicki. It's nice to be here, and welcome to Living Free. Tonight, we will be covering a couple of herbs that calm the stomach. Ginger root is one. As I've mentioned in a prior show, ginger root has proven to be more effective than Dramamine used for motion sickness. Used in the form of crystallized candy, ginger root can be given to small children in increments. But remember, it's a bit spicy even with the sugar coating. Ginger root can be used in pregnancy, but we recommend only after the second trimester starts or very light use during the first. In other words, if you're pregnant, do not drink cup after cup of ginger root beverage. One or two cups will be sufficient. In extreme cases of nausea, especially after chemotherapy, herbalists will recommend the use of cannabis. It is very effective for quelling nausea. I personally have helped two cancer patients using cannabis. It was the only thing that actually worked for this reason when comparing this to other drugs the doctors prescribed. The patients were able to keep their food down. The pill form of THC was not as effective. Now, herbs work in synergy. The herbalist does not separate the constituents from the herb as drug companies will do. While the whole herb method is slower than big pharma medicine, most of the time it is more beneficial in its healing properties compared to allopathic medicine. I use the whole herb when making my tinctures. I also hang on to my tinctures, brewing them for longer periods of time. I have some peppermint tincture that is now going on 4 or 5 years old. It is a vodka base and only gets better with age. It never sees the light of day until I take it out of the cabinet for use. Speaking of peppermint, peppermint is a very effective herb for use in stomach disorders. Herbalists use peppermint for calming muscle spasms, aromatherapy, to name a few things. Nothing beats a cup of peppermint tea to calm the nerves or the stomach. Peppermint oil, when rubbed on the temples, can also ease stress and get rid of those ghosts. Catnip is also part of the mint family. Catnip is actually a calmative for humans. Of course, we all know the effect that it has on our cat friends. Well, it's the opposite for humans. When catnip is combined with fennel seed and ginger root in the form of a tea, it has a wonderful reputation for ridding one of horrible gas pains. Infants with colic are given fennel seed and catnip tea, diluted, of course, and it has a very calming effect. I see over-the-counter remedies for infants and colic, which include the ginger root. You really don't need that for dealing with infants. The weakened-down version of the fennel seed and catnip tea is all that you need. Red raspberry leaf tea is also excellent to drink with stomach ailments. However, if you are in the beginning stages of pregnancy, then do not drink this as it may relax the uterus. Add honey to sweeten. Recently, it came to our attention that Steve Jobs of Apple delayed treatment for pancreas cancer to try alternative methods. Many doctors are now on the air bashing these alternatives to traditional treatment. I personally advise those with cancer to use allopathic methods and then add herbs to the program once they are on the road to recovery, even though I have read testimonies of people cured while using just herbs. I don't gamble with others' lives. I have found that many of the herbs are more healing than the allopathic medicines that these patients are prescribed for the simple remedies such as nausea, infection, etc. Oftentimes, cancer patients are prescribed pain medications where the side effects are horrendous. Herbalists offer many pain remedies with no or little side effects. People have remained conscious and aware in their final days using alternative pain remedies versus those of allopathic medicines, which usually render them unconscious. Important goodbyes and I love yous can be said when time is short using these alternative approaches. I agree with allopathic doctors that Mr. Jobs should have first received allopathic treatment for prolonging his life, but it would not have been a cure. Pancreatic cancer is 100% fatal even after receiving surgery and treatment. The number of years that you live after traditional treatment will be determined on how healthy you live your life following allopathic methods. It is my belief that modern medicine and the miracle of those gifted to become healthcare professionals are there for a reason, and that is to treat us when we are sick and for emergency medicine. It is our responsibility to stay healthy and take the preventative measures to remain healthy, such as diet and exercise. And even following those simple rules, things still can go wrong. As an herbalist, I never try to diagnose. After receiving a medical diagnosis, I will then sit down with the client and work out a plan of action using alternative methods. Oftentimes, actually many times, diet is the number one recommendation. Removing heavy glutens, dairy, and processed foods from the diet can result in miracles for the human condition. Our body simply cannot handle all the additives and hormones that are found in our foods today. Go back to the basics. Grow your own food. This has been Living Free with Camille Edwards. Until next week, live free and live well. Good night, everyone.
Tune in next week for another interesting topic on Living Free with Camille Edwards. MCHS does not intend to prescribe, recommend, or otherwise treat illnesses or afflictions. If you're ill, please see your medical practitioner for a diagnosis and any medicinal prescriptions, doses, or treatments. It's been reported that some herbs may interfere with surgery. If you're currently on any medication or herbal products, please advise your doctor or dentist at first point of contact.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks, Camille, and thank you very much to Dr. Doug Kelly, of course, in our ghostly conversations tonight. It's a fascinating subject, spirits and the spirit world and all the other dimensions, and we took last week to talk about them, and yeah, we thought we'd follow through with a part two. So if you have any questions this evening, any comments, you know, of course, you can sign on into the chat room, as some of you are, and ask your questions there. Or you can phone in, 714-459-3973. And we're glad to talk to you. And, of course, John Hightower is right there manning the phones waiting for the call. So, yeah, you know, Doug, it's just a great conversation that just never seems to end. And I think more and more people, this is the good side, more and more people are beginning to open their minds, open their hearts, and consider that we do live in many worlds, that this reality down here isn't the only one.
Yeah.
And that's very reassuring to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you've seen it too. Yeah. And of course, there is the flip side of that. People can get somewhat carried away. And one of the things I said that I would talk about this week is some highlights in my life. And to be honest, I got so many, it's very difficult to know which one to pick from. But, I have relatives that I have not seen since they passed. A lot of people say, how come my mother didn't come? Or how come my father hasn't come to me? And I thought, I don't know, mine haven't either. So, you know, it's not a guarantee that some people are going to come to us. And there's a lot of times that I have wished that I could somehow tune in, but I have, you know, some what I call my invisible folks that hang around me quite frequently, and some come and go, and some I haven't seen in a couple of years, and they'll stop in, and usually that's when I'm going to have a lot of dreams, and I know that I'm in for a bit of a, I always call it like going to metaphysical school in the cosmos, you know. So, but they let me know that, you know, everybody's okay out there. Folks are all right. And just because I haven't talked to them myself doesn't mean that, you know, everything isn't fine. That being said, I have, you know, had some pretty important people come back to me too. And the primary one is my brother, and as clearly as I would see any human being, it's like he's in the room. And it's not even that, you know, front brain inside that other dimension of your thinking that I see him. He's right there in front of me, and the only thing I might say is that there's a little bit of transparency, just a little hint of transparency to him, but he usually tells me that you know, something's going on, or he informs me of a little something in life, and I have, you know, of course he passed on when my first two children were born, and very young, so I always encouraged my children to say, hey, if you're ever scared, you know, you're ever in trouble, you just yell out for Uncle Dean and he'll be right there for you, and they always took great comfort in that. And, you know, they always felt very reassured. But there is one particular story that I have shared with Doug in the past, but I had been on a, that I'd like to share now. I had been on a, I was doing a television show years ago, and one of the features we wanted to do was inner city and into talking with some of the people who had, you know, native healing circles, and they had a whole clientele that were Aboriginal people. And while my cameraman was in the back, and I was out in the front having some coffee with some of the clients, and and people were waiting for a sandwich and getting some coffee. I sat down with a fellow with very long steel gray hair, and he had a tattoo on his forehead. It was a circle with points on in each direction of the circle. And a very striking man. And so I right away started to talk to him. And lo and behold, this other fellow, quite inebriated, I must put into here, came over and he pulled up a chair and he starts talking to me. So I've got these two gentlemen I'm having conversations with. And this older man with a tattoo on his forehead, he said, "This is the Mother Earth symbol, you know." And I said, "Yes, yes, I know." He said, "It's very important, you know." I said, "Yes, I agree. I totally agree, you know, to take care of the Earth." And I said, "So what brings you here?" He says, "Oh, I just drop in and see my people." I said, "Well, are you from around here?" "No, no, no, I'm from up there." I said, "Up there where? Like up north over there?" "Yeah, I just stop in to see my people." I said, "All right." And so I said, "You know, it would be very exciting if I could get my a cameraman, and if we could, would you consent to me asking you a few questions on camera?" And, you know, he frowned his brows, and he looked down, and he kind of nodded, and he said, "Well, that might be okay." And I said, "Well, that would be great." And, of course, we'd already been talking for about, I don't know, 10 minutes or so. Meanwhile, I have this simultaneous conversation with this other fellow who's talking about where he's from and what it's all about. So anyway, I barely got out of my chair, turned my back, and all these people are still within my eyes range when I turned around to call for my camera guy. And I then again glanced back at the table where I'd been sitting, and no one was there except the one fellow who was inebriated. And I was so stunned. I just couldn't believe where'd he go? And I poor people in the room there, I interrogated everybody. I did. I said, "Where did that fellow go?" And they said, "What fellow?" I said, "Well, didn't you see the fellow here?" And, no, nobody'd seen him. So he had told me his name was Charlie Eagle. Now, during our little visit, which is kind of important because about 3 years later, I met a woman who was from one of the northern Aboriginal communities. And I said, I told her this story, and I said, "You know, I met this," and she, before I even got his name up, she goes, "Oh, that's Charlie Eagle." I said, "Oh, you know him?" She goes, "Yeah, he's a spirit. He comes once in a while and, you know, talks to the people."
Huh. So did the drunk guy see him too?
You know, he didn't, well, it's kind of, "Oh, I don't remember. Was there somebody here?" So... So, however, the people in this cafeteria-type room were looking at me. I'm not sure, because I'm looking one way, talking to another guy to my left and looking to the right. So I'm not sure how it appeared, except I can only imagine what it is for the ghost whisperer or somebody, you know, to be in the middle of the street having a conversation with invisible somebodies. But now, Richard Bach wrote about this, and for people who might know, or might not know of Richard Bach, he wrote Jonathan Livingston Seagull many, many years ago. He has written numerous books since, but he has written many times about having encounters in the, you know, some back roads where his car went dead, and lo and behold, there's somebody there on the road, gets to have a talk with the guy, goes back in his vehicle, and somehow it starts up, but then the fellow he was talking to disappears. So there are occasions when these experiences can feel very real, and it's actually very exciting to me. What I have come to understand is it takes a lot of energy for a spirit to manifest their energy so that we can have them in our visual frame like that. So,
apparently not all of them can do it.
Absolutely. So I understand that Catherine has a question. I'm just going to scroll back here in the chat room. She says, She has a question on psychometry. And for those of you who do not know what psychometry is, it's when you hold an object and get impressions, or, you know, psychic impressions from an object. So Kathy says, I have been practicing this for some time now. I just lost it here. At first, I would just pick up emotions. Lately, I've been getting images. They are not detailed, but definable. People have been telling me I'm bang on. My question is there a limit to one's capabilities with this, no matter how much they practice? Well, you know, it's a very interesting subject, Catherine, because you can read anything. and a reading is a reading is a reading. And it's really about how much you want to invest or how much you want to share. There's always a responsibility, of course. You know, you don't want to frighten people. I mean, that's the point. But here's the thing. You could read clouds. You could read stones that are on the road. You can read sticks. You can, you know, throw marbles and however they land. the fact that you're touching something is only different in that it's a different kind of focus. It's more of a physical focus to the energy because you've touched it. But honestly, I could say the same of people who shuffle cards and then I take those cards. You know, is it that physical energy that's in those cards that I'm reading? You know, I'm picking up on their energy through holding the cards that they have just shuffled. So it just means to say to me that you are beginning to open up your own sensitivities. And they're now, before they were more emotional, now you're advancing yourself, developing in yourself, where you're getting visual images. The key is how to translate those or interpret the images that you're getting. And sometimes you get better at it, but it's to be as, I'm just going to say, you got to be responsible when you're reading for people. Because if you know, and look, it's true, for many, many years, I did not tell people that I saw spirits. Because, quite frankly, most people can't handle to hear that. So if you see a spirit there, that doesn't mean you're going to tell your client. If you feel that that's something that would upset them, then don't say it. And, you know, it's just, you can say, I don't know how I know these things. I just know these things. So if it's just you're going to start to get your own ways. You're going to develop your own ways, your own abilities, very unique to you, I might add. But it's more about the learning how to be with people that you want to skill yourself. It's like life skills and knowing how to, you know, interact better with people. And I don't mean better that you don't. I'm just saying we improve ourselves as we go. So I notice that you're saying something else here in the chat. Visual in the sense that I can see if it is a man or a woman, but not describe facial details. Well, I gather meaning to say you can see a man or woman's spirit. So this is the problem with chat. I'm afraid that we miss some of the words, or if I miss a line that somebody's written, then I'm... So Doug, maybe you can help me out.
I think she's wondering if she can improve to be able to pick up on facial details and other things like that.
Of spirits, you mean?
Yeah. Like right now, she can get the male or female part, but she's not picking up on facial details. Will she do that? Will she be able to do that with practice?
Perhaps. I don't always get it. Very often, I just see silhouettes of people. And then I'll get little like Kodak flashes in my mind of, if I'm going to describe whatever they are telepathically, this is how I'm going to just say this, describe it, they telepathically send me something in my mind that I can relate to. Maybe what that I'm seeing, knowing there's a spirit there, it's in my mind's eye, but I suddenly got this flash of a red bow tie. Oh, did your grandfather wear a red bow tie? You know, because I get the feeling of older grandfatherly, and then I see a red bow tie. I don't always see, it's a very rare thing for me to see spirits like I do, like I have with my brother, or like I did with Charlie Eagle. That's a very rare instance. So most of the time, they're very images that I get, and the impression just stays in my mind, or other things start to pop into my mind that I can just, now I'm quicker at it, you see, but you'll get quicker at it too. So does that make sense? I really hope that I've helped to describe that a little bit. Did that answer it, Doug, for what I'm...
I think so. We'll wait for Kathy's response. Meanwhile, Becky has a question. If you sense a spirit near you, are you then considered to be somewhat of a sensitive?
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you can, you know, it just means to say that you're opening up part of your sensory perceptions, and it doesn't matter where it comes from, go with it. Because something in you is evolving, something in you is growing, and it's just to relax into it and observe yourself. You know, this is the point about get to know yourself, because you have to know you to know what you're seeing, because you're seeing it through your eyes. So you'll learn to interpret it. But if you feel energies around you that do not belong to you, and you can't explain by the people you're around, absolutely, you're feeling spiritual energies, individual. And, you know, I'm...
Would you repeat that once more, would you?
You can be feeling spirit energies or residuals. It doesn't mean it's a spirit there, necessarily, like a poltergeist or a ghost, like a spirit that's grounded. It could very well mean there's a visitation, and they can come very... it's kind of like a little wind or a breeze. It can come in and out so quickly. You know, it's just a... blowing through, and it's a very light, airy kind of feel. Not spirits are grounded, but they can, in my experience, pass between the worlds and come for a visit. So you could be picking up on a residual energy also if you're in a place that's not familiar to you. So this is where you learn about yourself and know how to tune in, what you're tuning into, and you'll get better at interpreting what you're feeling. For me, I can very often hear words in my head, or I get pictures in my head. I know then that that's a spirit coming. I know that's a spirit trying to talk to me. I also have experiences where it's just like I get that thing out the side of my eye, or I feel a breeze, or a light passes in front of me, or a silhouette does, and I know that that's just somebody who's there but not talking to me. Now, that's not to say I'm not in a particularly good frame of mind all the time to be talking to them, so I might be saying, sorry guys, I'm not in the mood today, or like I'll catch you later because I've got some stuff to do. And this is where, again, Doug and I totally agree with this. They can't push me around. I'm the boss of me. So the thing is, if there's a warning about something, if there's like, geez, you know, there's somebody I should call or something's about to happen, they will tap me like, hello, Vicky, come on, pay attention. I say, okay, what is it? Pretty much the way I would be with people. So, you know, if you know, you tried to phone me once and I didn't answer, you didn't leave a message, you know, and so on, well, that's one way. But if you keep phoning me and leaving me messages, I know it's important. Spirits do the same thing. They'll get your attention. So I trust that, and I trust the relationship that I have with them. And it's always interesting for me to meet new spirits.
And Kathy... made the follow-up, I'm just wondering if I will ever be able to get finer details, no matter how much I practice. Is it possible that I am limited in the capabilities?
Well, right there, you put limitations on yourself. And you don't know what you're going to develop into because you're still learning about you. I still don't know. I have experiences that I could never have imagined, Catherine. You know, you couldn't tell me 30 years ago or 20 years ago or 10 years ago that I would be meeting intergalactic people also.
You mean interdimensional?
Interdimensional, aliens. I mean, that was a new one on me. I was never abducted as a kid. I didn't have that. I always knew there's life out there. But I started having new experiences, and it's opened up a whole new world. It's our evolution. Do not put limitations on yourself. Do not say, I'll never be capable of that, because you don't know. The error we make is trying to be psychic like someone else. Just be you. Just know what you do. So it's very important to make that distinction. Don't try to be like anybody else. Mind you, I got to tell you, I look at folks like John Edward. I mean, I couldn't do what he does to that degree every day. I'd burn out. I don't know how he does it. I think that's amazing. People to sustain that kind of energy output. But he's obviously got his ways and so on. But I can't be like that. You know, there's a lot of things that I don't want to do, I don't like to do, and I just stick to what I am comfortable with, and I just evolve from there. So I admire other folks who can do things. But, geez, you know, Doug Kelly's a better writer than I am, and that's okay.
Says you.
Well, you know, it's, you know, I have this talk with people all the time about self-certainty and confidence. To say I'm not good at something is not putting myself down. It's not. I am just being realistic that I made lousy angel food cake for many, many years. But I made great chocolate cakes. Oh, you want a cake, I'll build you a chocolate one. That's the best kind. So just know what's good for you. Just know where you can best focus your energy on in your own development. And you just never know what's going to come of that. So I say keep going, absolutely. And just self-study. Self-study, keep your energies open, and go from there. I noticed a little comment there in the chat about must not be a fairy descent. I think I missed something in there. There's all kinds of, and wormholes he's mentioning, there's all kinds of life on very many dimensions. The one that we most concern ourselves with here is the spirit world, those who are connected with the human energy, who've been here before, left hereafter, and that's the one that most of us want to really feel connected with. So I know Becky's just asking a question about the little people. We talked about little people before. They're in another dimensional realm, too. I love little people. But, you know, little people don't come in readings. So just they have their own experience. You know, they have their own kind of deal going on. But when I do readings or sit with people, little people, I've never had little people to come through. So not those elementals. To me, they don't belong in a reading. That's not how it is to be with people in a counseling way, in an advisory way, and helping them plan and make good decisions for the future. So I hope that helps you, Rebecca. Anything else that you can think of, Doug Kelly, that we can add in here?
No, interesting discussion. Thanks to Reverend John Hightower for helping behind the scenes, and thanks to Camille for her part, too.
Camille is always wonderful. I mean, I look forward to Camille. See, I learn stuff. I love that. That's great. Thank you very much, everybody. Of course, next week is the prelude to Halloween. So I guess you'd call it the eve of Halloween. Well, how would we say that, the day before Halloween? Is there a term for that?
Halloween, that's what it, well, it's...
I don't know.
I forgot what it is. There is a term. I don't keep up with that stuff. It's the night before Halloween. So, you know, we'll talk
about it.
There
we go, okay. Well, we'll talk about something interesting. We'll line it all up, and we'll try not to scare you too much. But thank you very much to everybody for joining us. Again, Seven White Lights, to all of your friends, your family, and all the other folks, even that you don't know, and have a fabulous week, and we will be back next Sunday. Thanks again.
Take care.